Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I'm Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, sport, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
And we are back for our 26th episode. This is a very momentous occasion for both Aditya and I. Even though you may be thinking, what's so significant or momentous about 26, apart from the fact that it's the multiple of two prime numbers, it is the fact that we have hit our six-month mark. It has been 6 months since we started this podcast, and we have successfully managed 26 weeks without any interruptions. So this is a chance for me and Aditya to pat ourselves on the back. Aditya, any words of wisdom to be passed on this occasion?
I did not choose a question to be asked last episode. And some of our... is it an eagle-eared listener? What do you call it? Dog-eared listener? What do you call it?
Dog anyway. Might be too much. Dog might be too much.
Okay, so very keen listeners did message me and ask me how come I chose to spare them this one time. And I must just tell them that it was not by any mercy or any sense of goodwill. It was just because I forgot. So I will ask a question this time around.
But the company line is that we had this so that our 26th episode will be have a little more gravitas.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah, let's just edit this entire thing out. Yeah, let's pretend that it was all because we care about our image at the halfway mark.
Yes.
I'm impressed, Vineet. I am impressed that we have reached this point. And I will be very honest with you. When we started this, I would have been happy to do this for 2 months. And if it had ended, I would have been like, okay, you know what? That was a fun run. We have lasted 6 months.
6 months, 6 months, and 6 months more. And another 6 months after that.
Okay.
So with this 26th episode, I'm going to start a new tradition where I'll be asking an audience question at the beginning of the episode, the answer of which we will reveal at the end of the episode, just to make sure that you're all listening all the way through. Yeah. So the question for today, which I will answer at the end of the episode, just to be fair, even Aditya doesn't know what question I'm going to ask. He doesn't know the answer either. So you'll all be finding out together. The audience question for this week's episode is, Amitabh Bachchan's 1978 super hit film Dawn has been remade in many languages over the years, in Telugu, Tamil, Punjabi, just to mention a few. The Malayalam remake in 1986 starred Mohanlal. Which serial killer's name was used for the title of the movie and as the name of the main character in the movie? I'll repeat. Amitabh Bachchan's 1978 super hit Dawn has been remade in many languages over the years. The Malayalam remake in 1986 starred Mohanlal. Which serial killer's name was used for the title of the movie and as the name of the main character in the movie? We'll reveal the answer at the end of the episode, so stay tuned.
Wow, exciting. I am excited because I also don't know the answer. So, yeah.
Aha, fun. Good. Yes. So, I think I'll start off today's episode with a question. This is related to the movies. The 1932 MGM movie Rasputin and the Empress insinuated that the character of Princess Natasha in the movie, who represented Princess Irina of Russia in real life, was raped by Rasputin. The real Princess Irina sued MGM for libel and won $127,373 in damages and $1 million US in an out-of-court settlement. In addition, the movie was taken out of distribution for decades. What commonly used practice originated after this incident?
The Boney M. song Rasputin. No, it didn't.
No.
I don't think it's that.
No,
that's the first thing that came to mind. Okay. Sued, got a bunch of money out of it, out of libel, and there is a common practice that originated from this occurrence.
Yes. It was not a practice until then, but since then, every movie follows this practice.
Okay. I think the names and characters depicted are purely fictitious, and any resemblance to any person living or dead is purely a coincidence. Is that... the party line?
Yes, it is. It is. It is the right answer. And to everybody's, to Aditya's credit, his work in the theater and in the media industry, he's got that disclaimer down pat. The actual disclaimer that MGM started off with repeats is as follows. All characters appearing in this work are fictitious. Any resemblance to any person living or dead is purely coincidental. This practice started after that very expensive lawsuit.
That makes sense. Yeah. Lesson learned, I imagine. Okay. That's a fun question. For the next question, and this is because it's a special episode, and I should tell our listeners that we had considered doing a fully audio-based questions this time around, like audio clues. And then we realized that a lot of music is copyrighted. So there's one question that I had, which would not infringe any copyright laws, and that I intend to ask now. So here's the sound for the question. Were you able to catch that, Vineet?
I did catch that. Sounded like dash, dash, dot, dot.
Perfect. Wow, you absolutely are right on the mark. I would imagine I don't need to tell you this, but I will anyways, that this is Morse code, right?
Yes.
Again, I have no idea how familiar you are with Morse code. So this is a two-parter. The first part is, what is this the Morse code for? And the second part is, how is this popular today, relevant in the pop culture of today, especially 2023?
Okay, I have a guess. This is way out of left field. So either I get this very right, in which case I will crow, or I will eat crow. So I have a feeling that this is the Morse code for MI. And this was the, you know, the dot dot dash dash dot. Okay, I'm horrible at that. But this was the tone that was used for the Mission Impossible theme song.
Man, Vineet, I was so proud of this question. I thought this would take a while to crack. You have just blown past my most impressive question of the set today. That just goes to show that nothing is impossible for Vineet Nair.
No, it's just that I happen to know this, that's all.
For those of us who are mere mortals, let me just tell you what Vineet has already, in fact, summarized very brilliantly. Dash, dash, dot, dot is the Morse code for MI. So M is dash, dash, and I is dot, dot, which is what the composer Lalo Schifrin used as inspiration when coming up for the theme of the TV series Mission Impossible back in the day. So Mission Impossible, the movie, is actually based off of a TV series which was on from 1966 to 1973. And for that TV series, the theme tune was the very iconic one that we still associate with the movies as well. Tung, 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 tung. And that's the dash, dash, dot, dot, dash, dash, dot, dot. And I'm pretty sure that we both sang that terribly, so we are not going to get any copyright infringement. <so.
laughs> Yeah, I don't think even Shazam would be able to identify, you know, whatever noises we made as actual music.
Well, we have clearly bypassed all legal ramifications. But yes, that was my little homage to the episode that could have been.
No, episode that will be. We'll figure a way out. Let me shift a little bit to a bit of history mixed with a little bit of mysticism. King Prithvi Narayan Shah once came across Baba Goraknath in the forest. Baba Goraknath was considered to be a yogi with supernatural powers who had traditionally protected King Prithvi's kingdom. The king offered some curd to the meditating yogi, who regurgitated it and asked the king to drink it. A repulsed Prithvi Narayan rejected the offering, allowing it to fall on the ground. As the white stream of curd dribbled on the king's 10 toes, the enraged holy man cursed him. What was the curse and how did it allegedly take effect? I'll repeat the question. King Prithvi Narayan Shah once came across Baba Goraknath, who was a yogi with supernatural powers who had traditionally protected King Prithvi's kingdom. The king offered some curd to the yogi, who regurgitated it and asked the king to drink it. A repulsed Prithvi Narayan rejected the offering, allowing it to fall on the ground. As the white stream of curd dribbled on the king's 10 toes, the enraged holy man cursed him. What was the curse and how did it allegedly take effect?
Interesting, because there are some what I imagine red herrings in this question.
No red herrings. There are hidden clues, I would say.
No red herrings because I'm chasing perhaps rabbits down the wrong hole.
A white rabbit. Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because you said curd and you said regurgitated and it flowed over the 10 toes. And I was immediately thinking of Ganga. And I connected it to dairy because it Akash Ganga is also the Milky Way. But I don't think Hindu mythology made that connection. So
this is not technically mythology. This is a, let's say, a folk tale, which a lot of people believe is true because of certain events.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Which would play into the answer.
Anyway, so I imagine that the whole Ganga thing is probably the wrong...
No, that's very cold. Very cold.
Okay. All right. Great. So let's think more about... Does it have to do with geography, like a water body or some sort of lake? Or
no,
some
I
sort
would
of
suggest you think of history. Historical events.
Historical events.
In this century.
Oh, in this century.
This is a folktale from many, many hundreds of years ago. But as I said, the curse was thought to be true after events in this century.
Wow, okay. I'm assuming the number 10 is significant?
Yes. You caught on that very well.
But I'm completely drawing a blank right now. Okay, this century, number 10. No, Vinita, I'll need a clue. I'm completely blank
right
now.
What I'll do is I will give you the curse.
Okay.
You can then tell me how it allegedly took effect.
Okay.
The curse was that Prithvi Narayan Shah's dynasty would be obliterated because of his pride after 10 generations. Hence the importance of 10.
Something happened this century where somebody's family line ended?
Yes. In quite spectacular fashion.
See, now I imagine that would be a significant event that I would have heard of.
Yes. So to your defense... you would have been quite young when this happened. It was this century, but you would have been quite young. You may not have, remembered. I specifically asked this question because I found it to be a very interesting question and answer. The fact is that the people surrounding this and the people of that particular area will never forget what happened.
Okay.
But it may not be in everybody's mind right now. People may have put it out of their minds.
Because I know the royal families of, say, Jaipur are still very much alive, Udaipur are alive. The only one I can think of is Hyderabad. I don't know if the Hyderabad...
Might I suggest that you not assume that this is from India?
Oh. Hmm. Oh, is it Bhutan? No, Bhutan still has one. Then Nepal, I would guess.
Yes. So what would be the event? Do you remember the event?
No, I'd have no clue. And I'm honestly just guessing stuff right now. So I have no clue what this
is. Okay. So I'll tell you. You've gotten all the major facts, right? You've got the country and whatnot. So Gorakhnath basically is supposed to be a 12th century or 10th century yogi who's supposed to have protected the kingdom of Nepal. The entire concept of Gorkha, Gorakh, it comes from that. Ooh. There's a etymological link there. That's one of the clues in the question. Prithvi Narayan Shah was the was the king who founded the Nepalese royal dynasty, the one that was ruling till 2000 in the early 2000s. So the event that we are talking about is the Nepalese royal family massacre of 2001.
Of course, I know that. Yes, the massacre. Yes. Okay. Did that finish off the whole family line?
Yeah, so here's the really interesting part. So in 2001, when King Birendra was killed in the royal palace in a midnight massacre along with the rest of his family, Nepal as a whole remembered the old tale and the fact that the slain king was the 9th descendant.
Wow.
After the king's murder, his eldest son Dipendra, who was the murderer, was then in a coma and reportedly after committing the killings was crowned king but passed away without recovering from the coma. So that would make him the 10th generation. Now, if I remember correctly, yeah, the person who then assumed the throne was his uncle, Gyanendra. But within a few years, parliament abolished the kingdom's 2-century-old monarchy and made it a federal democratic republic.
Wow, that's some Nostradamus level stuff. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yes. Now, for the sharp-eared or eagle-eared listeners, I know I did say that Baba Goraknath was supposed to be a 12th century yogi, and you're thinking this happened. Like, yes, I am aware of the discrepancy of the timelines here, but it's a folk tale. Folk tales traditionally don't subscribe to the same timelines that we insist on. Now, another interesting fact is that Gyanendra, the person on the throne before the monarchy was dissolved by the parliament, it was the second time that he had been made king.
Okay.
He'd been made king once, I think, in the 60s, due to some political maneuvering between the then king and the prime minister. So the then king had moved to India in between. I think he'd gone to Gwalior or Indore due to fear of assassination. And the prime minister at that time had put Gyanendra on the throne as a kind of puppet. But then this king came back and Gyanendra was removed. So he became king a second time.
Right. That's a really cool question. All right. Okay. So I will go from history to, well, the future, I guess. I'm going to paraphrase the overview of the rules for a game that's happening in Paris 2024 Olympics. Tell me which event this is, okay? At the Paris 2024 Games, Dash will comprise two events, one for men and one for women, where 16 of each will go face to face in spectacular fashion. These athletes will use a combination of power moves, and they will also have to improvise in a bid to secure the judges' votes. Which event am I talking about?
So when you said power moves and improvisation, my mind immediately went to a guitar battle for some reason. But I don't think that will be in the Olympics.
Paris 2024, air guitar. Yes.
air guitar. Hmm. 16 aside, right, you said?
That's right.
16 aside. It has to be some kind of sport. Is it tug of war?
No.
Because tug of war was part of the Olympics for a few years before they got rid of it. Hmm.
This one, I believe, has never been in the Olympics before. It made its debut at the Youth Olympics in Buenos Aires in 2018, and it had outstanding success, which is why they've decided to introduce it in 2024 at Paris.
Oh, wait, is it breakdancing?
It is breakdancing. It is.
Yes, I remember somebody mentioning this and I thought they were joking. But now when you mentioned it, and I, for some reason, I went to actually look it up. But now that you mentioned it, and I was like, wait, improvisation. Wait, she couldn't have been joking. Maybe she wasn't joking.
It is very much a fact. Because I'm on the Paris2024.org website right now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let me just give a quick overview. Breaking is a style of dance that originated in the US in the 1970s. And it took form in the lively block parties in the Bronx and emerging from hip-hop culture and has become very widely popular across the world today. What I paraphrased and how actually the rules are written down is that the breaking competition will comprise two events, one for men and one for women, where 16 B-boys, which is what the men who do breaking, and 16 B-girls will go face-to-face in spectacular solo battles. Athletes will use a combination of power moves, which include windmills, the six-step, and freezes. As they adapt their moves and improvise to the beat of the DJ's tracks, in a bid to secure the judges' votes and take home the first Olympic breaking title. And that is something to look forward to in 2024.
I wonder how they'd decide who qualifies for the Olympic finals.
That is true. I don't know. The cooler you look, I guess, because that's half the battle won right there. This, of course, is a little question that I would love because I deeply, deeply admire and love dancing. So, yes.
Yes, yes. And for those who don't know, Aditya is quite an accomplished dancer. Not that I have seen it for myself, but I have seen videos. And what I've seen in the videos has impressed me quite a bit.
This, I mean, Vineet, you're just setting me up for the big reveal that I'm going to be representing India in Paris 2024. I'm kidding. This is very much a joke, listeners. I am not going anywhere to represent India in any Olympics. I will not bring shame to the country like that. I will stick to asking questions in podcasts which are ridiculous. Yes.
Okay. Let me take you back to 1955 with this question. The results were announced on April 12, 1955 at the University of Michigan. $250,000, which is a great deal of money at the time, was earmarked and paid to broadcast the event. Americans turned on their radios to hear the details. Department stores set up loudspeakers, and judges suspended trials so that everyone in the courtroom could hear. Europeans listened on the Voice of America. One account of the event said, "The presentation was numbing, but the results were clear. Inside the auditorium, Americans tearfully and joyfully embraced the results. By the time Thomas Francis stepped down from the podium, church bells were ringing across the country. Factories were observing moments of silence, synagogues and churches were holding prayer meetings, and parents and teachers were weeping. It was as if a war had ended," one observer noted. April 12th almost became a national holiday as people took the rest of the day off, honked horns, and gave thanks. What was announced? What was the whole hullabaloo about?
This is 1955, right?
1955.
You said it sounded like it was almost like a war one, so it is probably not an actual war. Because I was going to try to venture a guess about some Korean War or something, but okay.
Technically, the Korean War has never ended.
Oh.
I think so.
All right.
So because we still have the demilitarized zone and whatnot, right? It's just an impasse.
I see. But it's not a war, obviously. So I was going to also say sporting event, but then again, sporting event would not make sense because there were moments of silence and stuff. So again, death.
Mm-hmm.
Death, but not war. Is it death because of some epidemic? Is it some sort of healthcare related something?
This is a happy occasion. This is health related. I'll give you that.
No, I'm saying like the deaths were because of something like an epidemic. And so conquering that was the...
Yes. You're on the right track.
But 1955, so... Wait, I'm going to try to guess this, but is it polio?
Ah, yes, it is. I was about to give you the next clue that the company who paid for the broadcast event was Eli Lilly.
Okay,
so this was basically the announcement of the field tests of the polio vaccine.
Wow, all right.
And the announcement was that it was effective. Until then, there were an average of around 45,000 polio cases a year in the US alone.
So this was just the field test and that's how much it was celebrated?
Yes, wow. Because polio was this dreaded condition. People spent a lot, there were children who spent almost their entire lives in iron lungs because of, you know, being afflicted by polio. A lot of deaths because of polio. So it was the fact of the matter is our generation or even our parents' generation, I think nobody's experienced the kind of dread of a disease. I think the closest we ever came to it was COVID. And maybe slightly older generations might think of HIV, but then we had a clear know-how of how HIV spread.
Right.
Polio, even though we had a know-how, smallpox, we had a know-how, but they could still come in and devastate a community. And so the impact of the vaccine was felt mostly by that generation. And they are still very pro-vaccine. So people don't remember, not that I do, but people don't remember how measles used to be such a huge problem and how the vaccine solved that. The problem is our current generation, I've seen a lot of anti-vaxxers, especially during COVID, who've come to the forefront and spouting their ideas. The problem is none of these people have ever had the misfortune to see a disease ravage a community and then feel the safety of being protected by a vaccine. They are the next generation. They are the generation who's never had to worry about that particular condition.
And I must say though, Vineet's very serious and something worth considering message was probably inspired by the fact that Vineet is also sick for the last 2-3 days. So he's very much personally speaking from a point of suffering where he himself was suffering because of a disease which unfortunately doesn't have a vaccine, not as effective a vaccine obviously as a polio vaccine. And but he's back and he's healthy and he's hale and hearty. So, well, wishing good health to everybody, including Vineet. All right, that was a pretty cool question and wow, such a iconic moment.
But you made very quick work of that. Very quick work of it.
Just because of the great clues. So I would have to give you, I would have to share some credit, definitely. All right. Speaking of iconic moments, but perhaps not in the most positive senses, Gary Gilmore killed two people in Utah in 1976. He had robbed and killed a gas station attendant and then a motel worker, according to the U.S. Supreme Court records. The record shows that Gilmore shot himself in the hand in the process and fled to his cousin's for medical aid, but she turned him over to the police. Eventually, later that year, he was sentenced to death in October, and he was sent to the state prison. When he reached the end of death row 3 months later, January 17, 1977, he was asked if he had any last words. Vineet, the question is, how do we remember these last words?
Okay, I have a guess.
Come on, Vineet, pretend like you don't know, just to soothe my ego.
No, I'm not sure if it's this guy, but the moment you said death row and last words.
Ooh, you are going to get it. I already know it. I've seen it in your eyes, Vineet. I have read you. Over the course of 6 months, I've read you enough.
Is this Nike? Just do it.
All right, guys, I'm retiring from this podcast starting right now.
No, some days it's just not my day. Today, for some reason, it is.
I'm coming up with questions and I'm trying really hard to stump this individual, and this man recovering from a bout of illness is still knocking it all out of the park. You are very correct. So facing down the five-man firing squad, Gilmore said, "Let's do it." Just quite the chutzpah when you are facing a five-man firing squad and they ask you for your last words and you say, "Let's do it." And I'm not sure how that ended up into the Nike marketing handbook, but it did. And they adapted it and made "Just do it" inspired by that.
You know, to be fair, when you started asking the question, I thought you were going in a different direction, because I remember Gary Gilmore being a familiar name, but I couldn't place it. But I, for a second, I thought you were going towards the supernatural. The Devil Made Me Do It. Okay. I think that's the movie on which I think it's based on a real court case. Right. Where a man claimed that, you know. So for a second, I thought you were going there. But then when you said execution and last words, I was like, okay, this must be it.
Now, my question had a bunch of red herrings, like a lot of superfluous information for no good reason. That had nothing to do with the answer. But Vineet, come on, man. This is just, you're emasculating me right now on live podcasting.
That's too strong. Too strong.
No, this is all credit to Vineet and his exceptional trivia skills. All right, Vineet, hit me with your question.
I'm going to go to a road less traveled for us. Sports. No, but this should be not too difficult for somebody like you. Okay. Ken Aston was the referee who officiated the infamous Battle of Santiago, the 1962 World Cup match between Italy and Chile. A match which was once described by BBC commentator Dave Coleman as the most stupid, appalling, disgusting, and disgraceful exhibition of football possibly in the history of the game. 4 years later, in 1966, hosts England met Argentina at the quarterfinal at Wembley. And Aston, who was in charge of refereeing the tournament, had to use all of his powers of diplomacy and persuasion to calm down the Argentines after sending off a few people. The controversial game also took on greater significance when match reports in the newspapers blamed the referee. This confusion and his long experience as a referee led Ken Aston to give what contribution, or to invent what?
Wow, I honestly have not much of a clue here. You said this was in when did you say this was?
So this, I gave you a history of his experience with two really bad matches. One was the 1962, the infamous Battle of Santiago. It was between Italy and Chile.
Okay.
And then later between England and Argentina in 1966. Again, there were a lot of people being sent off. There were arguments and Ken Aston had to calm everybody down. But the next day, in the newspapers, the blame was somewhat put on the referee.
So this is South America. This is like in the mid-19th century, I believe that's where the Battle of Santiago.
Yes, the second match we're talking about was in Wembley. So that's in England.
Okay. Because South America, but that also was Brazil. Because I was thinking there has something to do with the Brazil outfit and the football jersey that the Brazilian team wears. And that had something to do with the match around the same period. But again, you did not mention Brazil, so it's not that. Okay. Guess, but is it the cards, the red card and the yellow card?
Yes, it is the red and yellow cards.
Oh, okay.
Yes, the confusion and the reason it was being blamed was the controversial game was reported in the next day's newspapers, claiming that the referee had booked both the Charlton brothers, Bobby and Jack. But apparently the referee had not indicated this publicly, and England manager Alf Ramsey had approached FIFA for clarification. So he said, I need to make this absolutely clear.
Interesting.
As for the Battle of Santiago, which is a fascinating story, I'll be relaying that in a special mini episode. So watch out for that. Yes, that is something we are doing now. We'll be doing mini episodes of trivia, which may not have its place in our regular quiz time episodes. So we'll be doing those mini episodes. Yes, so that was a quick crack by Aditya as usual. So it's your turn now.
So I'm going to again give a question with hopefully so many red herrings that you will not crack it in the first 5 seconds. Or maybe you will and I will have to eat my words. Okay. The Vietnam War was the first war to feature large numbers of soldiers riding in helicopters. In 2000, the mast nut of a Bell 206B was removed to be repainted and was not restored and checked prior to a test flight. The helicopter crashed within 10 minutes of takeoff, killing the two occupants. These are two different factoids, right? Combining these two factoids, the Vietnam War thing and the 2000 unfortunate incident, what term is applied to this particular mast nut in a helicopter that came about during the Vietnam War?
Okay, left field, not sure about... No, I don't think it is, but FUBAR?
No, it's not FUBAR. That is a... FUBAR, I believe, is an older term, again, to do with the American military. I think FUBAR, at least it is referenced in Saving Private Ryan, which is World War II. So...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know how historically accurate that is, but probably older than Vietnam War, maybe.
Yes. Okay, so this is... The helicopter or plane that you were talking about in 2000, what was that again? It was a Bell?
206B. I'll just tell you that's a red herring, like it's the name of the helicopter.
No, I know it's a red herring, but I'm just trying to figure out if I've heard of something, because sometimes the red herring is what kind of hooks you and gives you the right answer.
Fair enough. In this case, it is Bell 206B.
So it's a helicopter which had a nut which had rusted. What was the problem with the nut?
Was removed to be repainted.
Okay, but then they forgot to put it back.
Exactly.
So they forgot to put it back. I think that's where the clue is, if I'm not... I'm guessing that's where I should be focusing on. And the Vietnam War is the first time that Americans went out in large numbers.
Well, I'll tell you what the reason I mentioned the Vietnam War is, because what I'm looking for started during Vietnam War.
The massive use of helicopters.
Massive use of helicopters would be perhaps... the point A, and I want to get to point B. So that also, because A happened during Vietnam War, B is what the answer is, and B also happened during Vietnam War. The whole point of B in question here is exemplified in the second fact, which is about the nut being repainted and not being restored.
You'll need to give me a clue. I'm completely lost here.
All right. So these were two separate events. Now let me tell you more specifically what I'm talking about. This is actually a term used in engineering. It is also generically used in engineering, but it came about from its origins during the Vietnam War, and it has continued on till date. And in engineering, it refers to any single component whose failure would cause catastrophic failure of the entire system.
Linchpin.
No, that's not a linchpin. So what I'm looking for is the name that is what originated in the Vietnam War. Right. So the name, or this phrase rather, or this term, whatever you might call it, that is generically applied throughout engineering to include any single component whose failure would cause catastrophic failure of the entire system.
trying to think of all the phrases. Is this a phrase that would be used by a non-engineering person?
Probably not.
You see, the problem's right there. I'm not an engineer. That's a whole problem.
Let me give you one more clue. If this thing were to fail, you would have only one recourse left. And that's where the name comes from.
Nope. Yeah, nothing. Nothing's clicking at all.
Okay. So let's break this down, shall we? Very quickly. Vineet, if you were on a helicopter and this vital little nut was not on the helicopter, what would you then do?
Okay, so you would have to jump out the window or jump out the door or whatever with a parachute, hopefully.
Say you were too high to jump out of the window and you did not have a parachute.
Then I'd crash and die, crash and burn.
Well, that is not something you are doing. That is something that gravity is doing to you.
Okay.
I don't think you can take credit for that, Vineet.
You can't glide in a helicopter. I don't think that's possible.
No. This is nothing technical. Honestly, this is, think as little technical jargon as you can. This has nothing to do with engineering or technology specifically. In fact, when technology and science fails you, what do you do?
You pray.
Yes. So what do you think this...
It's a prayer nut.
Very close. I'll give it to you. It's called a Jesus nut.
Oh, Jesus.
You pray to Jesus.
It's a Jesus nut. Nice.
And this is not perhaps the most well-known of trivia, but it's just a really fun piece of trivia. So I had to include this.
No, it's a fun piece of trivia. Jesus nut. Nice.
And it was originated by American soldiers in Vietnam during the Vietnam War, because that's when massive use of helicopters was happening during the war. Yeah.
I had some pieces of medical trivia related to the Vietnam War and the use of helicopters, but I don't think this is the audience for that.
I actually would encourage you to throw in one at least in a couple of episodes and cater to that, I don't know, one doctor who is listening to us on a 24-hour shift and just need something to stay awake with, and hopefully this is what keeps them awake and going. Yeah.
Okay. So this, again, I read this in a novel once, but I have a reason to believe that it's true, that a lot of American GIs were exposed to this lung infection called myeloidosis because the rotors of helicopters used to convert paddy water in Vietnam into a fine aerosol. When they used to spin, it will convert into a fine aerosol, which these GIs breathed, and it would cause amyloidosis, which was a kind of lung infection. And certain antibiotics were developed from that, and it's all a big story. But again, of course, that's all our time for today. We have to wrap up, we first have to go to Aditya, because there is a tradition that we have to restart. So Aditya, what's your question for this week?
Okay, so I guess I will ask my question, and then we have to respect the tradition that you started this episode, and you have to tell us the answer to that question, intriguing question.
Yes, that's going to be at the very end.
Oh, that is at the very end. Gotcha. All right. So my question this week, you know what? I'm going to steal a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Copyright laws have not allowed me to steal music, so I'm going to steal a joke, in fact, this time. It's a joke that I heard in a Bollywood movie of all places many years ago. So I'm going to ask that as a question, and you can tell me the answer next week. Or rather, I'll tell the answer next week. And the question is, the Jesus nut refers to helicopters. What would be something similar in an aeroplane? And that, friends, would be a question that I'll answer in our next episode.
Fair enough. You heard that here for the first time, I hope, assuming that no copyright laws are applied here. So coming back to the tradition that we are starting, at the beginning of the episode, I asked the following question. Amitabh Bachchan's 1978 super hit Dawn has been remade in many languages over the years. The Malayalam remake in 1986 starred Mohanlal. Which serial killer's name was used for the title of the movie as well as the name of the main character? Aditya, do you have any guesses before I reveal it for our audience?
Obviously, the name is Polio, the name of the villain. Oh, that villainous Polio.
No, in that case, if you wanted to be more medically accurate, I'm putting on my medical hat, the biggest serial killer then would be mosquitoes. Mosquitoes have killed more men, women and children since the beginning of human history than any other animal not including, I'm not looking at microbes, so please don't get pedantic on me and say that some microbe has killed more people. Let me just say the mosquitoes have killed more people. Just accept it.
I apologize to all our listeners. I don't know what beast I've unleashed where Vineet has gotten super medically technical on us. Just unleashed a bunch of trivia. But hey, that is actually pretty cool. No, I'm kidding. Mosquitoes have killed more than any other killer out there. Okay, no, but that is not the answer to your question, obviously.
That is not the answer to the question. The name of the movie should tell you the name of the serial killer. The movie was, and for the life of me, I can't think of what the director and the writer were smoking when they named it. They called it Sobhraj.
Of course. Sobhraj.
Yes, Sobhraj. Now, 1986 was his landmark year for Mohanlal. He had an innumerable number of hits in the same year. But this was not one of them. And I think the name had a little bit to do with it. But that's just my theory. So the Malayalam remake of Dawn was called Sobhraj, after Charles Sobhraj, the infamous bikini killer, serial killer, who killed a lot of young women and men throughout Southeast Asia.
So any resemblance to a person living or dead was definitely intended and was not coincidental at all in this case.
True, true. Possible. Yeah. That's quite possible.
The makers were like, come at me, Sobhraj. What you gonna do, buddy?
Yeah, they must be like, he'll never come to Kerala. It's not like this place has beaches. So that's all for this episode. Thank you all for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show, learned something new. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. It helps us reach a wider audience and allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. We would also love to hear from you, feedback, suggestions, and even trivia. You can reach us on Instagram at @RUQuizzingMe. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Aditya will be back after the musical sting with the fact check for the episode, our official cover our asses document in audio format. Until the next episode, that is a bye from me.
See you guys next week. And here's the fact check for the episode. Princess Irina was awarded £25,000 in a lawsuit against MGM by the British courts. With the exchange rate in 1934, it would have been roughly $125,000. There was an out-of-court settlement, which was awarded by MGM to the princess for dropping her lawsuits in other countries. The amount of this settlement is disputed, and various accounts claim it was anywhere between $125,000 more to $1 million more. King Birendra of Nepal was the 10th generation after Prithvi Narayan Shah, not the 9th. He was, however, the 9th king after King Prithvi, because one of his ancestors, Crown Prince Trilokya, died before ascending to the throne. This also makes Dipendra the 11th generation, but 10th king. King Gyanendra briefly became king of Nepal as a 3-year-old from 1950 to 1951. A complete cessation of the Korean War hostilities happened with the Korean Armistice Agreement. It is, however, a purely military document and only ensures a ceasefire rather than an agreement between governments to normalize relations. The Just Do It tagline was created by the ad agency Whedon & Kennedy during a meeting with Nike in 1987. Dan Whedon, the co-founder of the firm, had read about Gary Gilmore's last words and decided it fit the need of the budding sports company Nike. And that's all for the fact check.